everybody. Not too tired after last night's events. Welcome to the Workspace half-year results, taking us up to September. Some would say we chose quite an interesting morning to announce our results. Extraordinary, really. I mean, joking aside, it's clearly we've got lots of comments and thoughts around what happened in June this year for Brexit, which I still think has many more potential implications for the UK. But 2016 has certainly been a year of extraordinary events. I'm sure there'll be some bookies, pundits and pollsters who are losing their jobs as we speak, for sure. But and I think one of the issues when you're running a business of any sort in these kind of times, that the uncertainty and disruption makes it very, very difficult to predict and forecast forward. And obviously we're always being asked by the press, by everybody, what's going to happen next, what's going to happen next. I think most of the real estate businesses over the last couple of years have moved away from trying to give too much of a forecast, and probably sensibly so. There's no point trying to do anything too out of way. But what you can do is you can look at the present, and I think at Workspace we're looking and feeling in really good shape, and hopefully these results highlight that, which I'll go through in a minute. Customer demand for our product is strong. That demand is filtering through to good income growth. That income growth is filtering through straight to the bottom line. It's very much that operational leverage marketing platform that I've talked about in the past. So as well as posting a 16% increase in trading profit for the 6 months, we also announced today a significant increase in our dividend, which I'll come back to later on. So all in all, and against the backdrop of what we're seeing this morning, hopefully Workspace, a little ray of light this morning in your thinking. We appreciate there's lots going on, so we won't be talking for too long, but we certainly want to get across our story. Just before we go into the detail, I mean, I see these results as yet another endorsement that what we are doing every day is working and that our clear and focused strategy is definitely paying off. It's differentiating us in the marketplace, it's adding real value, and it's continuing to allow us to find more and more interesting things to do to grow the business. And that's why, in a way, it's so frustrating standing up here that we have to temper that excitement and temper the enthusiasm we have for the business because of the current event risk environment that we live in, today being a great example. And of course, we should be careful in these uncertain times. We, like other businesses, are monitoring data more closely. We are looking across the business for any signs of weakness. And we, of course, are adopting a slightly more cautious approach in certain areas. But in light of all of that, and, of course, the strong results that we'll run through in a minute, I personally can't help but feel very, very excited about the future of our business. Workspace has a modern business model that is highly responsive and very adaptable. We now have the ability to market our product to all and any occupiers across London, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. I think that's quite important. And we have, as you all know, a direct relationship with our customers, starting from that initial marketing right the way through to their long-term occupational needs. And I think it's that interaction and knowledge that is hugely powerful in today's dynamic and very competitive real estate market. And again, we'll talk more about that. That's why I think Workspace continues to be a long-term, sustainable investment proposition. There's still more to do, still more to come. I hope this business is one that will be able to face up to any future challenges and continue to drive value for shareholders. So all in all, a rosy picture on an extraordinary morning. As usual, I'm going to run through the overall results, give you a little bit more colour on how some of the focused efforts, the platform, the active management that I've talked about is really adding value. Hand over to Graham, who will run through the financial performance, and then I'll pop back very briefly just to talk a little bit about the portfolio, some of our customers, and some of the dynamics that we're seeing across the estate. So, moving to the results, I'll attempt to use my little flicker. As you know, my focus is always rent roll and then obviously valuation, but we'll start at the top and work our way down. Like-for-like rent roll in the 6 months up 5.5%, as always, driven by the renewals, the lettings, all of the active management and hands-on work that's going on across the estate, but a really good result for the first 6 months. Rent per square foot up 4.5%. You know what I'm going to say. I still think there's more value to go there. We're still under £25 a square foot on average. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But still, to me, feels very good value for the real estate that we've got. And I think that's a good place to be in good times or uncertain times. Inquiries and occupancy, I'm going to talk a little bit more about inquiries in a minute because I struggle sometimes when we talk about these on a quarterly basis, because I'm always saying to you, don't play too much into what happens on a quarter by quarter, both occupancy and inquiries. It's all about what's happening on the top line. But clearly the inquiries occupancy levels are very important to us internally. So I've done a little bit more work to show you some more longer term trends rather than short term trends, because I think that's the most important point. Very pleased with the property valuation, which is a strange thing to say, bearing in mind it's gone down a little bit. But we are seeing a 0.9% movement down on the valuation. The like-for-like yield moved out 30 basis points from 5% to 5.3%, offset by the rentalisation, capitalisation of the rent roll, and also the value add, which you all know about. We'll come back to, and it's no different to when the valuations were moving forward well. So pretty pleased about that. Capital value per square foot 374. Again, good value in my view. NAV dropped down to £9.15. And this is where we're really focusing people's attention. We have done for the last year or two. Cash flow dropping down to the bottom line. So trading profit up 16% for the first 6 months, coming in at £23.6 million. And that gave the board the confidence. So we'll be looking forward at the business and seeing how some of the new developments and the like-for-like is growing. We increased our dividend at the interim stage by 40%. Graham will talk a little bit more about the projection of that. But I think, bearing in mind the platform, the people, the marketing, the cash flow that we've got coming in, the new product that we've got coming out, we were confident to do that. So all in all, a very strong half. I'm just going to dig, forgetting US elections, but normally I'd hand over to Graham straight away now, but I just want to give you a couple of slides, just because I think it's more of a Brexit-related and reminders of where that income growth is coming from, because we're very much focused on that. And this isn't new news to you, you know this, but I just want to reiterate it. So what are the key drivers for us on that income growth? Clearly, we've got the like-for-like portfolio, which is all about filling up buildings or keeping buildings full and driving that pricing. Then we have the other lever that we're pulling very aggressively at the moment. You can see the numbers coming through, and we predicted this 3 or 4 years ago. As we're completing the projects, which we've completed quite a few now, we're seeing letting up and pricing really, really powering on those new products projects. What we've also got is a lot of projects currently underway, which we're all also going very well. And, of course, we have a pipeline of more. And I think the key point to make here, and it comes back to where we are in the whole cycle and where we are in Brexit. I mean, it's not a specific issue. It's just a general issue. Is that across the whole of our estate, if you look at pricing, I think that we're very much a price maker rather than a price taker. And I've been saying quite a lot, and I find myself saying, when I keep saying we're on catch-up and London's moving forward, we are still on catch-up in my view. And you only have to look back at the average rent per square foot on the like-for-like is less than 25. You then look at the overall rental growth. You look at the pace and the letting quality of the projects. You then look in the back of the appendix of this book and you look at the ERVs that we're putting on the new projects, historical, very cautious. So I still think there's a lot more to go across the estate. We'll talk a little bit more about the pipeline. And then, of course, acquisitions. Acquisitions, we haven't bought anything for a while. We're trying to. We're very active, a very disciplined approach. When you've got all of this going on, there's no point rushing into the wrong acquisition, and you know that that's been a consistent message with us. So lots and lots of areas to drive growth, but the main focus really on the like-for-like and the projects. A little bit more colour on the like-for-like. I won't spend too much time on this. A couple of messages to make. A good quarter of growth. So that was pleasing to see. If you then move over to where that growth came from, you could read into that that it was more about occupancy than it was rent per square foot, and this quarter that happened to be the case. Again, I wouldn't read too much into that. You can see other quarters we've had where we've had very strong rent per square foot and actually occupancy has gone down. So the point I make is, and we're grappling a little bit with the inquiries and occupancy, is to make sure that we think about long-term trends rather than short-term effects of a quarter. And we saw that. When I first joined, we saw occupancy and rent moving up together. We then saw quarters where occupancy would come off, rent would move forward. It depends on building specific. It depends on our overall portfolio. But generally, you can see that growth coming through. And the other point to make again is that we are still, I'm going to keep saying it, less than that £25 a square foot. So on the like-for-like portfolio, I think there still is a lot more to come. If you then switch to projects, busy slide, and I think that's the whole point of the slide, the message overall is there is a lot going on and it's all pretty exciting stuff. Those in grey are the projects that we've completed. You'll we recognize a few. If you came on our Capital Markets tour last year, we went to Grand Union Studios over in West London. That's now up and running and pretty much full. Metal Box Factory, some good old names you know there. In the blue, we've got the projects underway, so some pretty exciting things coming forward. We also took some people to the Record Hall, which used to be known as Hatton Garden, just around the corner from Farringdon. That's pretty much a brand new building we're building. And then you've got things like The Frames, which is the renamed Hollywell, which is the building that we took down and we're rebuilding in Shoreditch. So some pretty exciting properties coming through, soon to be coming back to us. Then you've got the pipeline with planning in red. Again, just highlight a few interesting. We've got the second phase of Vox Studios down in Vauxhall, which has gone very well. The second phase of The Lightbulb down in Wandsworth. So we've proven the model with the first stage, planning permission to build even more space. That's what we'll continue to do. And then in the green area, we've got those that are coming through. There's obviously a lot more over here. In fact, there's some more listed in the schedule. There's more coming out of the like-for-like. But we've got some interesting stuff coming through here. Eastern Street, that is the property that we bought let to Amnesty International. That lease is coming to an end, so we'll be getting that back. We're hoping to get planning permission for a new floor on top. Edinburgh House, you'll all remember, was the building we bought let to the Met Police, where they paid us handsomely to come out. Actually, that now should be red, because we actually got planning permission for our extension on Monday this week, which is great news. Greville Street, the two buildings we've got just a stone's throw from Farringdon Station, which is hopefully we're going to get planning on very soon, and Leroy House up in Islington. So again, the point of this slide is to show lots of activity, lots of exciting activity, and a lot more to come. And the backbone to all of that is the strength of demand, clearly. That is. People say, "What's the one thing that keeps you up at night?" The only answer to that has to be making sure we can fill our buildings. And I said I'd talk a little bit more about inquiries. Again, a few simple messages. This is the magic thousand that we've kind of given ourselves a target for quite some time now to try and hit. If you think about 1,000 per month, that's 12,000 a year of quality inquiries. That's quite a significant amount of inquiry levels. And you'll see that pretty strong and stable story. You clearly have obvious seasonal issues like December, but there isn't any necessary rhyme or reason for each quarter. In fact, you'll see this August, we had a very strong August, whereas last year it wasn't quite so strong. And you can see since Brexit, I mean, this takes you right there up to last month. This is October. We've actually had a very, very strong time since Brexit. So a few messages in there, one of which is don't read too much into the short term. Look at the long-term average. And also the fact that after Brexit, because we have to reference Brexit, we have seen some pretty strong demand from all areas. And right behind this, and this is, I'm going to hand over to Graham now. I'm going to come back in a minute. Behind all of this, and it's something I'm going to keep talking about now, is our direct marketing platform. This is becoming more and more important, more and more of a differentiator, and more powerful when it comes to capturing more market share. And all of these inquiries are driven from our own infrastructure. So we have a proper handle on exactly what's going on. And I think that's one thing that I really do want people to take away. We've seen the rise of the serviced office. We've seen other landlords trying to get more into multi-let. And I think what it's all about is marketing. Buying the right buildings, having the right facilities, everyone can do. But actually having the marketing platform is going to become more and more important. And as I say, I will come back and talk a little bit more about that in a minute.
Thank you, Jamie. And good morning, everyone. As Jamie said, I'd like to run you through the financial performance now in a little bit more detail. So looking first at the overall income statement, as you see, we got good growth in rental income in the first half of the year, up 6%. If you strip out the impact of acquisition and disposals, underlying rental income was up 13% in the first half of the year. Looking down the income statement, admin expenses were down 4% year-on-year. Now, that's slightly flattering because of the actual reduction in the share incentive costs. That came down by about 50%. Underlying admin costs were up 14% year-on-year, and that was driven by an additional eight headcount in our project management, marketing, and some of our new business initiative areas, and underlying staff cost growth of around 4%. Net finance costs were also down 1 million pounds, and that was really the benefit of lower levels of debt. Debt levels were around 50 million lower year-on-year. I'll come back to comment around the interest costs later. Overall then, that delivered a significant uplift in trading profits. Trading profits up, as Jamie mentioned, 16% to 23.6 million. You can see that that flows through to the underlying earnings per share. Underlying earnings per share are up 15%. Now, alongside that, obviously slightly ahead of expectations, we increased the interim dividend by 40% to 6.8p. My steer going forward is, and also driven by our requirements as a REIT, is that you should expect us really to be progressing our dividend in line with maintaining at least 1.3 times cover in terms of trading profits. Just looking at that rental income growth in a little bit more detail, the two drivers of our income growth are very similar to the story we've been saying over the last couple of years. That is growth in our like-for-like income driven by pricing growth, uplift in income from our completed projects, and that's largely driven, at least initially, by letting those buildings up to around 90%. You'll see those both twin drivers, very powerful uplifts in income in the year-on-year growth. Current projects, as always, we highlight, you do suffer short-term attrition as we're progressing with a large number of refurbishment redevelopment projects. Obviously, over time, once we've completed those projects, we all then expect to see significant uplifts in income. Then you have the net impact of acquisitions and disposals year-on-year, and very large impact this year from disposals, because you'll recall that we did dispose of 95 million of industrial properties in the first 6 months of 2016. Just looking at that income growth in a little bit more detail in the context of overall rent roll, our total rent roll is around 78 million pounds, and I've broken here that into the various categories just to show the relative scales of those rent rolls. Like-for-like continues to be the dominant element of our overall portfolio. 61% of our overall rent roll lies within our like-for-like portfolio. You'll see that we had strong growth there in rent roll over the 6 months, 5.9 million pounds, and that equates to 13% growth in rent roll. Completed projects are a very different picture from a much lower base, but obviously here we're getting the power from uplift in income as we start to let up those schemes. Year-on-year growth, 6.4 million pounds, that represents 90% growth in the year. That is the power, as Jamie mentioned, of the release that we have of all this new space as we complete our refurbishment redevelopment program. Completed projects represent about 16% of our overall rent roll. Similarly, current projects represent about 16% of our overall rent roll. This is where we are progressing with a number of schemes, and you do see short-term attrition, as you see here, 2 million drop in rent roll over the year. Lastly, acquisitions. Acquisitions represent around 7% of our overall rent roll. That's really just to put in context the overall drivers of growth in this business. In that context, alongside that like-for-like growth, I just want to highlight what we've set out in detail in the appendices is that project pipeline. As usual, in appendices one and two, we set out full details of our current activity and pipeline activity. Just to highlight here the potential substantial income growth that we're going to be able to deliver from these projects, which are very much in our own control. In terms of completed projects, which are letting up very well, and as we've seen, are giving us good growth, there's still more to come. We've completed new and upgraded 5 business centers. If we let those up to 90% occupancy at current rental levels, there's still 3 million more rental income to come. Likewise, on current projects, and these are only the projects we've identified where we've actually got planning, actually, or we're well advanced in progress on these schemes. In total, there are 16 business centers to be delivered in new and upgraded form. Now, these will be delivered over the coming years, and they will deliver, if we assume that we can rent them up to 90% at current rental levels again, just under 18 million pounds of rent roll growth. And as we've seen in the past, potentially a substantial element of that drops to the bottom line in terms of then driving our profit growth. And really, this is just to give you a picture of the drivers of organic growth, our like-for-like, plus the delivery of this project pipeline. Just coming back to the financial statements, just looking at cash flow, very similar story to the past in as much as the profits and the cash we generate from our trading operations are used to underpin our progressive dividend policy. And as you'll see here, we continue to generate good, strong cash flow from our business. Net debt's, as always, very low. We're not seeing any real deterioration in the bad debt profile. Bad debts in the half year were 0.1 million pounds. On the investment side, we are accelerating our capital investment program to support that pipeline, 30 million CapEx spend in the half year. That's offset by capital receipts we received. This was overage payments, in fact, on the residential development of the light bulb that we received. And alongside that, we also got 46 million pounds in from the completion of our Blackrock joint venture. That included the 25 million performance fee that we received. Looking at the balance sheet, a fairly static picture over the half year, with a slight reduction in net asset value by 0.9% to 9.15 pounds. Net debt reduced by 33 million as a result of the cash that we've received in from disposals. Loan to value, very conservatively placed at 14%, with undrawn facilities of just over 120 million pounds. Looking at the property valuation, net movement not very exciting, a 1 million movement in the 6 months. But underneath that, there is obviously the uplift from the capital expenditure investment we made, offset by the cash overage that we received, and a 60 million reduction, as Jamie mentioned, in the overall valuation. Just looking at that 60 million reduction in a little bit more detail, there's a lot of individual moving parts, and I've broken it down into our sort of standard portfolio breakdown. Like for like, strong growth in rent per sq ft, up 4.5%, and that gives you a shade under 50 million uplift. But against that, yields moved out, or initial yields moved out by 0.3% to 5.3%, so more than offsetting that uplift we got from the rental growth. So a marginal decrease of 7 million in our like-for-like property portfolio valuation. And that represents around a full 50% of our overall property valuation. Completed projects, as we've said, we've been delighted with the progress we've made, both in terms of demand we're seeing and the pricing we're achieving. And as a result of that, we've got significant uplifts across our completed projects. I've just highlighted the highest three there. And that rental pricing growth more than offsetting a slight movement out in yield, as we saw in the like-for-like portfolio. Redevelopments, a small uplift there. And I think, obviously, comforting to you that we've now completed on three of the sales of residential schemes, that we announced those in October, and we got a 3 million uplift from those disposals, which were ahead of the March valuation. On refurbishment and acquisitions, it's a similar story on both, in as much as where we've seen reductions in the valuations, it's been where we've been creating voids and actually creating vacant possession on individual buildings short term to be able to, for us to progress with our refurbishment redevelopment plans. Now, from my perspective, I'd say that's more of a technical sort of valuation approach, where it's gonna have a short-term impact on value. We're very confident the longer term, these schemes, once we've completed them and delivered the new product, will give us significant uplifts in value. So I think, you know, we are very confident that those projects still do have very compelling returns for us long term. And lastly, on debt, as I mentioned earlier, on debt, 33 million reduction in the half year. Average interest cost has ticked up to 5.5%, and that's largely as a result of the fact that, as a result of the disposals, we had an undrawn revolver facility for the bulk of the period, so the cost of that were really carried in the overall average. We did take advantage of the opportunity to cancel some of our U.K. term debt in September this year. That was carrying an interest cost of around  4%, and we replaced that by drawing down on our revolver facilities with a marginal cost of just under  2%. So while we have to pay a penalty cost of 0.9 million to cancel that term debt, actually, that payback is very quick. And it will also mean that the average interest cost, absent acquisitions and disposals in the second half, should drop to around 5%. Okay, I'd like to hand you back now to Jamie.
So, I just want to take you straight back to where I left off, which is that direct marketing platform and the power thereof. And I think, what do I mean when I say that? I guess we are both control and knowledge freaks at Workspace, and by having our own platform and by having our own infrastructure, means that we don't rely on anybody telling us what's actually happening in the market today. We don't rely on anyone telling us what we should be doing. And once we've done something, we also don't rely on anyone telling us how it's going. We do all of it ourselves. And I think when it comes to looking across the capital now, we're in a very, very strong position when it comes to customer base. And when I first got here 5, 6 years ago, we talked about London changing. We will probably remember we got Knight Frank in to show you a video how London is changing. And I think it's just continuing at pace. Stratford's become an area now of real commercial, residential. We've got Google going to King's Cross. We've got Apple going to Battersea. So the whole of the capital is open for business. And I think valuers, coming back to the valuation point Graham was talking about, valuers are going to struggle when people start saying to them, where's prime, where's secondary? Of course, the West End and the City has its place. But are areas like the South Bank, areas like, you know, North and King's Cross now becoming very, very different in their valuation and also their rental piece? I think it's the same with our properties. Again, this just summarizes all the activity. By using our own information, our own knowledge, our own visibility, we can push on in areas, refurbishing properties and providing the market with exactly the right product that it requires for the modern occupier. And it's worth just touching on, before I finish, a couple of customer stories. And I tried to pick out a few brands that you will have heard of, partly to make the point that our business is full of lots and lots of businesses that you will have heard of. Couple of stories. Bulldog Grooming, we've talked about them in the past, certainly prior to my watch. Interesting for two reasons. One is growth and the other is pricing. So Bulldog joined us in West London in one of our buildings, Pall Mall. Some of you may know the old beautiful depository we were about to refurbish. In 2007, they took 700 square feet. They then expanded their business and they expanded with us, took a unit next door of 500 square feet in 2014. They were paying £33 a square foot in that space. As soon as we launched, and I don't know which dot it is, as soon as we launched Grand Union Studios, which is pretty much next door, for those of you who know it, they were one of the first people to say, that's the right property for us to make our headquarters as we're growing. So in May this year, they took 2,000 square feet in Grand Union Studios at £47.50. Their business continues to grow. You'll probably see them in most supermarkets, chemists, high streets. They're doing very well. They've been very keen to try and expand into the US. And I think recently, within the last couple of weeks, they announced that they've been bought by a US global, Edge Clear or Edgeware, who own Wilkinson Swords. So very much of their right kind of fit. So a really, really interesting story of how businesses grow with us and how we can work with them to provide the right kind of space as they're growing. And also how a business is confident to say, we'll take £47.50 from £33, because that's affordable and it's right for our company. Mozilla, I'm sure many of you have heard of them, and many of you will have the Firefox browser on your PC. These are the guys who control that. They are a major global technology company. About half a billion people have that browser on their PC. The story here is interesting in that they came out of Covent Garden in March 2016. They took about 3,500 square feet with us in the metal box factory at £78 a square foot. And the interesting point here is one of the attractions to them was the fact that the metal box factory had just the right technological connectivity for them. Very, very important for their business. You probably saw we made an announcement. Metal box factory got platinum wired scored, which is the highest you can get, a lot with a shard. There's not that many buildings within London that have that. So it was a function of, yes, location, but we know we've talked location, location, technology. This was a good example where they needed to be able to have that connectivity to be able to carry on with their business. So really exciting to have them down at the metal box. And then the other thing I've mentioned more recently is more traditional, in inverted commas, businesses coming to us. And it comes back to my marketing platform point. We are finding now that as the new modern ways of working is penetrating more and more up the food chain, more and more businesses are saying to themselves, where should we be? What's right for our company? We've got a lease expiring in the West End of the City or wherever it might be. Let's think about where we go. Breast Cancer Care were a good example. They came out of the South Bank. They joined us down at Kennington Park, where we are. They signed in September this year, so after Brexit. They took 10,000 sq ft down there at £45 a sq ft. We actually put them on a 10-year lease because they wanted to invest quite a bit in the business, in the building. And having them 10,000 sq ft on such a large estate was no issue whatsoever. 10,000 sq ft at £45, and I'd say a more traditional type of occupier. So some interesting stories, growth and pricing, the fact that our buildings are now ticking the boxes for the high-end, big global technology companies, and more traditional London-based businesses coming to us. So I guess in summary and looking forward, great momentum at Workspace. I hope this will continue. We've had a very active and successful 6 months. Thanks go out to all of the staff, as always, because they're the ones who help produce such a great set of results. I believe we have the right strategy, one that is very well suited to the current and future demands of all types of occupiers across London. The modern world continues to change at a rapid pace, and Workspace has the ability to adapt and take advantage of that change. We are a landlord that embraces and is excited about the future, not one which is anxious and trying to catch up. Clearly, there's a great amount of uncertainty around. I don't need to tell you that this morning. And it's likely to be with us for some time now. And whilst no one can predict the actual outcome, I believe Workspace will continue to deliver on its strategy, continue to drive shareholder value. And as I said earlier, I think this business has a lot more to do, and I believe there's a lot more to come. So, thank you all very much. Questions? Shall I sit down?
Totally up to you.
Well, no, it's a right.
It'd be difficult for sort of flicking between the two of you. Mike Bessel from Bank of America. Just in terms of post-Brexit, I'll try and avoid the bigger world pictures today, but in terms of post-Brexit, have you seen a change in the type of tenant that's coming through in the inquiries? Is there any sign? You highlighted more traditional businesses. Is that a reflection of some businesses being less willing to sign more traditional leases and therefore looking at alternatives?
That's a good question. I mean, we were driving our marketing platform, forget Brexit, forget any market coming off before Brexit, to try and penetrate more market share. And we saw that the modern world was infiltrating more and more companies, and we thought, well, actually, we're open for business. No, we're not branding our company a certain type. In fact, we've spoken to you guys many times to say we're not a tech or this or that. It's open for anyone. And I think it's interesting. People look at it now and say, is the rise of the serviced office, is the rise of a workspace, is the rise of all these other kind of more flexible, if that's the right word to use, companies a reflection that people want shorter leases? I think the answer to that is it's actually a reflection of that's the way the world and the occupier is moving. I think more importantly, on the flip side of that, is pricing. Pricing is more of a where's Brexit going to take us in that respect. And that's where I come back to the value for money point with this business as well. I think it's easy to forget because we have a very modern feel. We have a very modern approach. And I think some of our property is now seen as at the high end of ticking all the boxes for all the reasons we've talked about. But it is still, on average, at a low price point. So I can understand why people's reaction is everyone's going to flood the shorter leases because it means if something goes wrong with your business, you can get out. But that's been our DNA for quite some time. And if you take the Bulldog example, you take some of the other examples, actually having flexibility as you're growing is equally as important. If someone like Bulldog comes to us and they've signed a two-year lease and halfway through they say they want more space, we're not going to turn around to them and say, well, come and talk to us at the end of your lease. We're going to take that trade now. So I think it's I can see where people are coming from, but the price point is the bit that gives me comfort.
And in terms of further developments as well as sort of acquisition opportunities, firstly, a number of headlines continue to come out negative for London residential. Is the price point of what's in your pipeline protecting you, or are you hearing any sort of concerns back from the house builders you typically partner with? And also sort of thoughts on acquisition opportunities in any price correction. Are we there yet? What's the strategy?
I mean, on the residential side, I think we said a lot, we've obviously just done three deals at book or above. So not just for us, but for you guys, that's an interesting piece of data in those kind of price points. And we said all along that the assets that we have, which have potential for residential, aren't in the thousands of thousands Mayfair bracket. So we shall see, and the jury is out with us, just like it is with you, and all we can do is add the value by getting the permission and see what the market does. To date, we still think there's a lot of demand, a lot of strength from the house builders, but that may change. The other thing we will also say is if you look at the returns that we get when we get that residential planning permission, even if pricing does come off a little bit, it's still absolutely the right thing to do for shareholders, because quite often we're taking low-grade industrials and putting them into residential. So that's the residential side. So far, so good, and we don't see that changing. On the acquisition side, I mean, we would love to have bought more, because if the market had done what some thought it would do, which is flood distressed sellers, everyone needs to sell everything, and we are out there, shoe leather being worked, we're looking at everything. It didn't happen. I mean, what we saw was a couple of the institutions chucked on some very, very good assets because they needed to sell. They sold well, maybe a little bit of a discount. Valuations will come through. We're one of the first London propcos to report. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of weeks, to see what happens with other valuations. So, it is Brexit related, and I think for personal view is that there is this cloud on everyone's shoulder. Certainly in my working career, I've never been involved in a situation where you know there's an event coming up in a couple of years which you're going to have to deal with. Usually it happens there and then and you deal with it. So the whole capital market value side is something we need to try and work our way through. What we're looking for is someone who might just suddenly need to sell, and they have to sell, and we can catch something that is absolutely at the right kind of price. But it comes back to what we've always said. With everything else that's going on, we always want acquisitions to be complementary, and we want people to look at this business and say, that was a good deal. So the market is not yet flooded with assets to buy, unfortunately.
Hi, good morning. I'm Kosek from Queen Street. Good to see, first of all, the operational results holding up well in the face of Brexit. Two questions from me, please. The first one on business rates. So we've seen the new rateable values that have been released in September. I think your previous take on business rates is that you've got a lot of smaller tenants which may benefit from the small business relief. What's your current thinking based on the new rateable values and any work that you may have done since then, please?
It's work in progress, not least because actually the rules are still being worked through as well. But you know, what we are very conscious of is it will impact our customers, so we're working unit by unit across our estate to assess the potential impact. And I think, as you highlight, the benefit that our customers will have is a lot of them will be able to enjoy the small business relief, which is being increased, so that's a good positive for us, as well as actually the way they're changing the transition relief will actually benefit a lot of our small to mid-sized customers as well. I wouldn't really want to say more than that at the moment. Every property is different, and actually every unit is different within an individual property as well. But rest assured, you know, it's something we're working very hard to make sure that we can support our customers and get them potentially, hopefully, the best deals that they can in terms of minimising the impact for their, obviously, occupational costs. But I think, you know, we have a lot of opportunities to help them take benefits of what the government's rightly putting in place to protect the growth of the smaller and sort of mid-sized business sector in London.
Thank you. Yeah. And then the second question about, you know, acquisitions. You were just talking about the lack of at discounts that you might be, interested in. Your shares are currently, even after today's rise, are trading at roughly 25% discount to the NAV. What point do you say actually that the shares have got cheap enough that you might actually think, well, rather than acquisitions and buildings, we might consider our shares? Is there a point where you would consider the shares as well?
I mean, there has to be a point, and it's something we discuss regularly. But whilst we're not spending money on acquisitions, we are deploying capital quite quickly on the refurbishments and redevelopments, which, if you look at the kind of returns we're getting on those, is a very, very, very good use of capital. So right now, I've always thought with share buybacks, what is our job? Our job is to look at the things that we can deploy our capital in and see which is the best investment and say, right, that's the one to do. So of course there comes a point, but I don't think we're at that point right now. Which is careful. You've got to choose your word carefully, because that would suggest, you know, we don't think there's going to be an increase in the share price. But part of it comes back to that cloud that's sitting over everybody and thinking, well, how can you predict what's going to happen there as well? So not, there is a point, but we're not planning that at the moment.
I think we look at it also in the whole, and obviously an element of that consideration was around the uplift in the dividend, because we are, you know, well positioned from a debt perspective. We are creating quite a lot of momentum in terms of profit growth under our own control. So I think, you know, hopefully, I think from an investor perspective, we are beginning to, you know, increase that dividend to help them in a relatively volatile capital market position to actually see real value in terms of dividend yield.
Good morning, it's David Brockton from Liberum. One question, please, going back to the inquiry numbers. And I'm just interested to understand to what extent you monitor the conversion of those inquiries and what happens to those inquiries in future, because clearly 1,000 is a big number per month, but you're only doing 100 lets. So even if that number were to fall to 700, it could be irrelevant. So can you just talk about how sophisticated you are in terms of managing those inquiries and converting them?
Thank you. We are hugely sophisticated, and I mean that honestly. I mean, that's just quality inquiries. So we have a lot more what we call website hits. So we filter that down into quality inquiries, and that usually means someone saying, I'm looking for space, here are my details. As soon as we've got their details, I mean, small things like we give everyone unique phone numbers, we monitor them very, very closely, both for whether they follow through to actually do something, and then once we've got that inquiry, we've also got them on our database. So we're not overly aggressive with the moment someone's given us their email address, we're going to bombard them with stuff. But certainly new launches, keeping in touch and those kind of things is very, very important. And I've said all along, if you look at the ratio of quality inquiry through to deal, in fact, quality inquiry through to people who actually look around space through to a deal, there's a lot of noise there. And even if you assume half of them are tire kickers, which they're probably not, because they're actually saying, I'm looking for space, here are my details. That's one of the reasons we're so excited about trying to move forward, get more space, and that customer market is opening up. So it's quite exciting, and that's exactly the point. Having that data, being able to go back to that data, monitoring what's going on is quite powerful.
Is there an overwhelming reason for the people that don't come to you, where the particular place that they go, or a particular reason why they don't choose you?
Not really. I mean, we've started to put in place, I mentioned earlier, any prudent business, I mean, as well as increasing our visibility on our data, you know, there are certain things we've done since Brexit, just to see how long people are taking to close deals, whether there's any trends coming out, which by the way, there aren't. But what we're trying to do is we're also getting anecdotal, so our centre managers, the marketing team, are actually writing in columns, which we look at on a daily basis or a weekly basis. Someone looked around there, and this is the comment they made. And there's no common reason. I mean, I think it's a bit like everything. Maybe they're not quite ready. Maybe they come back in a 6 months' time and do something. But what we want to make sure we do is that every single time, there's never a comment about the building. There's never a comment about our staff. There's never a comment about our infrastructure. The building happens to be in the wrong place. We can't do that unless we're going to rely on plate tectonics. So we're doing everything we possibly can. And if it turns out it's just not right, or it's not right timing, then I don't think there's anything we can do apart from keep hold of that inquiry.
Hi, it's Paul Gorey at Numis. Just a quick question on rental growth, and specifically, I guess, the spread across the properties. Is it the case that you're seeing fairly uniform growth across kind of all properties, or would you say that the newer properties are accelerating faster than the older ones? Is the ones coming from the lowest base are seeing the quickest growth? Can we just get a little more color there?
That's right. We debated whether to put the comments in, but it's such a bland comment, because actually, as you rightly say, there is no discernible variation in terms of rental growth across the portfolio. Having said that, I think we're cognizant of the fact that the more modern centres will, longer term, be where the demand will be strongest. So I think, you are always going to have potentially an uplift, as you see, on those completed projects, very, very strong demand. But overall, in the like-for-like portfolio, we're seeing a pretty consistent message in terms of price points and also in terms of location across London. So there's nothing majorly that would vary over time between locations and price point, which is, you know, a comforting message in terms of that level of demand.
Good morning, Ashley Smith from Santander. How has the weighted average lease length performed over this period, over the year, and how do you have a target or strategy for that in light of recent events?
No, I mean, we are very much as we have been, apart from a few larger occupiers who approach us on larger estates like Breast Cancer Care who want to take larger space. We don't really debate lease length. We don't really debate rent freeze. It's very much business as usual, 2 to 3 year leases. No 6 month deposit up front. So we don't really look at life in a weighted average lease length way. And we've held our nerve and we're going to continue to do that. And I think, as we've talked about earlier, the market is moving more towards natural flexibility in property occupation than it is away from it. So we just need to wait till it becomes the norm.
Oliver Reeve from Deutsche Bank. Just one question. In light of the investment risk that you discussed at the start of your speech, is there any way that you've materially changed the way that you're approaching the business in terms of returns hurdles, or is it really a case of given your low loan to value, you're ready to capitalise on any opportunities if they were to arise? Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the latter. I mean, we are poised and ready to deploy capital in any way if we feel it's the right thing to do. And I think the event risk is something we think about in terms of how it affects us operationally. The flip side and the positive side is, does it create buying opportunities that could be interesting? So we're thinking about both of those sides of the coin.
But our hurdle rates are unchanged. I mean, you know, we are very strict around our 10% IRR is ungeared, is our, you know, our 5-year horizon is very much the focus in terms of any investment we make.
Which we've said all along, it's challenging on the acquisition front. I mean, it was challenging in a good market. We haven't seen, coming back to Mike's question, we haven't seen lots of distressed selling. And for every one buyer that retreats and says, not for me, over the hill comes someone else. And we've had a few assets where we've got quite excited, which have been withdrawn by the vendors for various reasons. So it's just there to be monitored, I think.
James Carswell from Peel Hunt. I know you mentioned you weren't going to make any forecasts, but I think 6 months ago you mentioned that 2% roughly rental growth per quarter was kind of a loose guidance for the year ahead. Obviously H1, you know, so far so good. Are you still happy with that kind of number?
No, you remember better than I do, but I think what we said was we couldn't possibly keep maintaining 16% growth per annum, which is what we did over the last couple of years. So I think we've tried to moderate your expectations. If I said 2%, I probably shouldn't have said that. But you're right, though. I mean, I think if you look at the momentum, if you just take the, I'm not being rude here, but if you take CBRE's ERV numbers and extrapolate those in terms of reversion, that would give you something of that quantum. Historically, we've generally overachieved against what CBRE put in terms of ERVs on our like-for-like portfolio. So I think I wouldn't steer you away from that, although I deny saying it.
That's good, I like that. Great. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.